What a lovely lyrical outpouring in that music, and what spectacular clarinet playing there. Who is that?
You wouldn't think it's the same composer as the Sinfonietta, would you?
No, Bernard Herrmann still. Yeah. Who's this beautiful clarinet player of yours?
Well, this is one of the jewels of the post-classical ensemble. David Jones has been playing with us at principal clarinet for many years, and he is actually also principal clarinet of the Washington National Opera in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh. It's lovely, but I love the way the piece opens. You already said he knows the neighborhood that you're in, but it's a fresh neighborhood at the same time. It's wonderful what he does. Joe, you brought all this wonderful stuff of Bernard Herrmann. I've never heard any of this music.
This is actually a piece I love, and it is my personal favorite chamber work by any American composer. Mm. We're going to eventually hear the whole thing. It's 30 minutes long. But to set it up, we're going to talk first about Herrmann as a radio composer and then as a film composer, and we will move from a couple of his film scores in a somewhat similar style, Vertigo and The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, to the clarinet quintet by way of buttressing what we heard him say about 30 minutes ago, which is that my music sounds like Herrmann. He's a romantic composer, hopelessly out of fashion. The clarinet quintet is from the 1960s. He's often morbidly romantic. He likes lurid colors and nervous ostinatos. He's a master of scoring. These are all constants. And if we start at the beginning, we start with radio. I mentioned earlier that he began with Orson Welles, then he worked with Norman Corwin. Norman Corwin was the genius of a genre that's now completely dead and forgotten, which is radio drama.
Tell us more, because I don't know about Norman Corwin. I mean, everyone knows about Orson Welles, but who's this Norman Corwin?
He's the most prolific and important writer and producer of radio drama. And radio drama requires music.
Okay, so that's not soap operas. It's not Amos and Andy. It's not Tom Mix or Space Invaders or whatever. This is real drama.
So we'll sample a radio drama in a moment. This is part of a trilogy of radio dramas that Corwin created in 1944 during the war. They're patriotic. This one is called Whitman, and it's a vehicle for Charles Laughton. I brought along a little quote from Mr. Laughton, who frequently worked with Norman Corwin. He said, "There is not an actor alive who would not drop whatever he's doing to be on one of Norman Corwin's radio shows." Hmm. Thanks to Christopher Husted, who recreated the score and parts, we were able to perform Whitman. And what we discovered was a major American concert work. Orchestras should perform Whitman as a melodrama. When we say melodrama, we mean in musical parlance. Yeah. You marry the spoken word in music. Well, this is a masterful example of melodrama. And rather than sample our performance, I'd like to share with you a little bit of the original broadcast. I must say that it privileges the voice, and you can't appreciate unless you use your imagination how special the music is. This is a part of Whitman, the text of which is all drawn by Norman Corwin from the actual poems of Walt Whitman.
I celebrate myself and sing myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of grass. Once a child said, fetching the grass to me with full hands,
"What is the grass?"
How could I answer the child? I do not know what it is any more than she. I guess it must be the flag of my disposition, out of hopeful green stuff woven. Or I guess it is the handkerchief of the Lord, a scented gift and remembrance, a designedly dropped, bearing the owner's name somewhere in the corners, that we may see and remark and say, "Whose?" Or I guess the grass is the beautiful, uncut hair of graves. Tenderly will I use you, curling grass. It may be you transpire from the breasts of young men. It may be you are from old people. This grass is very dark to be from the white heads of old mothers. Dark to come from under the faint red roofs of mouths. I wish I could translate the hints about the dead young men and women and the hints about old men and mothers and the offspring taken soon out of their laps. What do you think has become of the young and old men? And what do you think has become of the women and children? They are alive and well somewhere. The smallest sprout shows there is really no death. And if ever there was, it led forward life. All goes onward and outward. Nothing collapses. And to die is different from what anyone supposed. And luckier.
The remarkable voice of the great English actor Charles Laughton. You may recall him from his film roles, David Copperfield, Mutiny on the Bounty, where he played Captain Bligh, on and on and on. But there, Charles Laughton is reading the words of Walt Whitman as set to music by Bernard Herrmann. That's from 1944.
And conducted in the studio by Bernard Herrmann. We want to return to this piece and record it.
It sounds like a fairly full orchestra.
No, it's just strings, and harp, piano, percussion.
But it's colorful, nonetheless.
And very beautiful.
It's hypnotically beautiful.
Uh-huh. How long is the whole piece?
25 minutes.
Wow. All drawn from Leaves of Grass, or at least the parts that I recognize there.
So the point we're making, which was our discovery, really, is that Herrmann, the film composer, comes out of Herrmann, the radio composer. That's how he cut his teeth, scoring dialogue, creating mood, and then he scores 51 films. I want to just share a few of his irascible observations about being a film composer. He had occasion to respond to an article by Eric Leinsdorf, the conductor, in the New York Times in 1945, who called film music odious and absurd. So Herrmann's response read in part, "I fail to see what Leinsdorf means by the word subordinate. If film music is subordinate, so is music in the theater and the opera house. Music in the films is a vital necessity, a living force. Had Mr. Leinsdorf ever seen a film in the projection room before the music was added, he would understand thoroughly how important the score is." And he also writes, "Contrary to all rumor, there is no such thing as the, quote, standardization of motion picture music." This is, again, citing Leinsdorf. "The only standard for film music is that it be dramatic. Perhaps this is something Mr. Leinsdorf does not understand when he deplores the fact that many of our modern composers have given up working for the screen. Might it not be simply that these composers, though their talents are of sterling quality, lack the dramatic flair?" So, Bill, I sense a very strong whiff of Aaron Copland in this comment. I think this is Herrmann talking about Copland's departure from Hollywood.
Joe, I know that you like to continue our contretemps, but I can't begin to guess about that. What I do think is that it's a very interesting thing for me that, in a way, the crucible which formed Herrmann's dramatic operations was actually radio, because I always have thought that radio is a more creative medium than the ones that add the visuals to it. Television, I mean, like, we use the phrase veg out, right? You go home and you turn on the TV and you veg out. You don't have to think about it. Yeah. It slaps you in the face with it. If you're following a radio drama, it actually requires you to be creative. The listener has to continue it and actually use his imagination or her imagination to form the rest of the picture. And that's the medium for which he's writing, which sets him up so well to go hand in hand with the work of Hitchcock, for example.
And he is working with Welles and Corwin. These are guys who are supremely creative. They're not going to sit on Bernard Herrmann. They're going to liberate Bernard Herrmann. So, yeah, this is absolutely an essential component of the Herrmann story, that he worked with Orson Welles, that he worked with Norman Corwin, that he worked on radio, a creative medium.
But just to go back, since you bring up Copland again, rather than beat a dead horse, Prokofiev made a number of film scores, so did Shostakovich. They also retreated, if you will, to writing classical music without any kind of pictures attached. I think that's a fairly natural progression back and forth.
I don't think so. I think the wording of this, given up working for the screen, that is literally what Copland did after scoring The Heiress. He was upset that William Wyler had Bowdlerized the score, and he picked up and left and said, I'm never coming back. How do you think Herman received that?
I don't know, but how about Hemingway? How about Fitzgerald? How about other people? William Faulkner went to Hollywood, said, I drank a lot of whiskey and made a lot of money. I didn't do much else.
But Herman, in this context, is defending Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
These guys, they said they couldn't work here. Well, maybe they were the problem, not Hollywood.
Well,
by the way, in the next breath, Herman was the first person to excoriate Hollywood, to say he couldn't stand it. He was leaving. He was never going back. This is just in the context, I think, looking over his shoulder at the composers who he felt did not respect him.
Well, I'm sorry they didn't respect him, but you sure do. I'm sorry they didn't respect him, but you sure do. And certainly do I.
That's right. That's right. So we're now going to go to film in order to set up the clarinet quintet, which is in his most romantic mode. And the films that it evokes for me are Vertigo and The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. The Ghost and Mrs. Muir being, one reads, Herman's own favorite film score among the 51 he composed. What's your favorite Herman film score?
I love Vertigo. I love that the augmented triads going up and down.
It's
just driving you nuts. And it's like diminished sevenths and augmented triads are curious in that any one of the notes that makes it up could be the root. And it's also disoriented when you play the wrong ones together. It's wonderful. So he's creating a kind of crazy thing, Vertigo. That's maybe my favorite. I also like North by Northwest a lot.
You're, of course, thinking of the title music for Vertigo.
I'm thinking of the love music in it.
Oh, yes, the love music, yeah, too.
Which to me sounds like Tristan.
It's very Wagnerian.
Angel, do you have favorite Herman scores?
Vertigo I like. You know, after having studied both the Sinfonietta and the Psycho narrative, I really appreciated much more Psycho. All the slow movements there. I think the Citizen Kane is also phenomenal. So I have a special love for Vertigo also because of the Dalí images there and how also he depicts those very surrealistic images with music.
And you know, like, I mean, so many of his images, you watch Jimmy hanging onto the roof in San Francisco and you watch that girl falling from the tower. There's another picture where you think, like, he's dealing with this sort of swirl of gravity pulling people down, perhaps to their death. He's very good at that kind of image, isn't he?
So we're now going to sample two scores that set up the clarinet quintet, Vertigo, the love scene, and the Liebestod that ends The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. This is pretty famous that Hitchcock wrote, when we go into the love scene, we should let all traffic noises fade because Mr. Herman may have something to say here.
I love that. That's the voice of Alfred Hitchcock. Remember those old TV shows? You know, he would come on and it's exactly the way he would speak.
Okay, so let's hear what Mr. Herman had to say.
Thank you.
So that's famous romantic music by Bernard Herrmann. This other music, maybe not as famous, but it should be. It's the Liebestod from The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. If you know this film, Mrs. Muir dies, and then she reunites with her lover, the ghost, the sea captain, and they walk off into the sky. So when I call that a Liebestod, a love death, not only is it a love death, but as Wagner's Liebestod does, it draws together the motivic strands of the symphonic score for The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
We are just listening to the conclusion of the score for The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, a 1947 picture scored by Bernard Herrmann.
So this romantic sound world is the sound world of the clarinet quintet, which he composes in 1967. I'll just share with you a little bit of the program note that I wrote for our performance. I say, it furnishes an irresistible vehicle for the range and seamless legato of the clarinet. The liquid ebb and flow of sound, the lapping waves of song, the interpolated valse triste, this is the first movement, acquire a barely perceptible cumulative momentum and intensification of multiplying eddies and ripples. The second movement is in three movements, is a Berceuse, I say, whose disturbing existential undertow is, of course, a Herrmann signature. The final, Canto Amoroso, love song, begins with the violin singing a love duet in thirds. Soon the thirds accelerate as romantic zephyrs of Venetian carnival is heard across the water. And I add, equally pertinent is the quintet's dedication to Norma Shepherd, who became Herrmann's third wife the same year this music was composed. So the music is a love note.
And he's not a young man exactly at this time.
This is his third marriage. So, Angel, who are we hearing?
We have, as we said before, our principal clarinetist, David Jones, our concertmaster, Nathaniel Drayblade, playing first violin. Eva Capelletti is playing second. Viola is played by Philippe Chow. And Benjamin Capps is the cellist. We have three movements. it starts with a lento, allegro, moderato. The second is an andante, versus, which is a kind of a lullaby. And the third movement is a slow tempo, andantino, which is a canto amoroso, so a love song.
So this is a 25-minute composition, the Clarinet Quintet by Bernard Herrmann.
Thank you.
Well, that is a revelation, I have to say. Bernard Herrmann, one of our greatest film composers. That's a piece for clarinet and string quartet. It has a title, Souvenirs of a Voyage.
Souvenirs of a Voyage.
Yeah. This is a wonderful performance, once again, from Post Classical Ensemble. Tell me again, Angel, the name of this wonderful clarinetist.
Yes, David Jones, who is our principal clarinetist.
Yeah, it's not only David, but the whole quartet. They just sound wonderful. That's such an evocative piece. We're sitting here listening to this music, and this will be interesting, because we're crazy about this classical music. We got so much stuff in our head, and I keep saying, well, that sounds like Respighi there, that sounds like Harold in Italy. But we have to agree the last movement really does sound like Italy, doesn't it? Or at least it does to the three of us.
Yeah, I think it's an Italian love scene.
Uh-huh. And he does say, you know, it's souvenirs of voyage. He's just married. Maybe they went
He's
on
about
a honeymoon.
To marry for the third time. He's in love.
And of course, we talk about the influences. Of course, France is an influence. Debussy is an influence also in Psycho, some scenes of the film, of the music he wrote for that. But that doesn't mean that we are talking about a Bernard Herrmann idiom.
That's right.
It sounds like Bernard Herrmann. For many of the audiences that maybe never heard this music, I think that at this point of the program, this quintet would sound to them as Bernard Herrmann.
I can see exactly what you're after.
Because the melodic lines, and there is a specific harmonic enchantment that he uses that sounds absolutely to him. This is his voice.
I agree. It's a wonderful voice, very convincing to me.
So I think we have to radically reassess the place of this composer in our musical narrative. And I'm going to indulge myself and again quote something that I wrote, because I don't think I can improve on it. This is the last paragraph of the program essay that I wrote for our festival. I wrote that, "If Herrmann's full measure has yet to be taken, surely such scores as Vertigo or the Clarinet Quintet surpass in distinction the earnest efforts of many a pedigreed American in futile pursuit of the great American symphony, including some who won the Pulitzer Prize of Music when Herrmann was at his peak. Of Herrmann's scores for Citizen Kane, the Magnificent Ambersons, Vertigo, and Psycho, Alex Ross writes in The Rest is Noise that they, quote, contain some of the century's most piercingly effective dramatic music." And he ain't just talking about American music. "Even less have chroniclers of American music grappled with the scope of Herrmann's achievement and influence. Remarkably, the present festival, 40 years after his death, is the first to attempt to celebrate Bernard Herrmann in the round. It will surely not be the last, nor will it be our last Bernard Herrmann festival."
And now, Joe, I have to ask the inevitable question. What else did Herrmann write for concert hall?
He has a symphony, 1941. He has a string quartet, and he has a big cantata, Moby Dick, 1937.
Well, we have a chance to hear a little more music of Bernard Herrmann before we leave this hour. And Joe, you've really piqued my curiosity with mentioning a cantata on Moby Dick, Herman Melville's novel.
This is a 1937 45-minute cantata premiered by John Barbaroli in the New York Philharmonic. Barbaroli was a big advocate for Herrmann. I believe there has been one subsequent performance in the U.S. since 1937 for reasons that don't really bear pondering. There are two commercial recordings. This is from the recording conducted by the composer with the London Philharmonic and the Aeolian Singers. And we're going to hear the Sailor's Chorus from early on in this work. I'll just read a little bit of the libretto. "The ribs and terrors in the whale arched over me a dismal gloom, while all of God's sunlit waves rolled by and lifted me deepening down to doom. I saw the opening maw of hell with endless pain and sorrow there, which none but they that feel can tell. Oh, I was plunging to despair."
Thank you.
my song forever shall record that terrible, that joyful hour. I give the glory to my God, His all the mercy and the power. And then comes that tremendous, thunderous amen. It's amazing stuff, isn't it, Joe?
I believe in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the crescendo to this final amen is phenomenal. I mean, how he uses the brass and the low register is really incredible. He was a great orchestrator.
You can hear it, too, because for the most part, he's kept the men's choruses rather low in their vocal range. Yeah. And then as he moves towards the major key, they ascend.
The ending addition of the trumpets is really...
And nobody knows this music.
No. Moby Dick, a cantata composed by Bernard Herrmann. In this performance, this was the composer, Bernard Herrmann, conducting the London Philharmonic with the Aeolian Singers. I wonder when they did that and what were the circumstances. He was having a hard time getting his music played, wasn't he, Joe?
He would record pieces that were not performed in concert.
But meanwhile, his film scores were being played, and it's still played pretty much every second all across the world.
Yeah, you'd think it would be an obvious opportunity for an orchestra to do his concert music, but the symphony is not done. Mm-hmm. Moby Dick is not done. Even the narrative from Psycho is not done. The Sinfonietta is not done.
Yep.
And you played just that beautiful little, we heard an excerpt of Charles Laughton reading the
Whitman,
the words of
the
Whitman.
Radio plays
the radio
are
piece.
Not done. None of this music is performed.
Well, Joe, once again, this has been a remarkable period to spend with you and Angel. I love getting together with you occasionally. We're sitting in a little studio in New York City run by my engineer, Bill Sigmund, Digital Island Recording Studios. You come to town, it's on 6th Avenue and 23rd Street, sort of Chelsea one way and Flatiron District the other. But up here on this fifth floor, Joe Horowitz comes in and makes magic. I don't know how you do it, but thanks for your presence today. This has been Post Classical here on WWFM. I'm Bill McLaughlin, along with Joseph Horowitz and Angel Gil Ordonez, music director of Post Classical Ensemble, which is based in Washington, D.C. You can find out about Post Classical Ensemble at postclassical.com. They record on the Naxos labels, and you can find the recordings at naxos.com. Post Classical is a bi-monthly production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Post Classical, a bi-monthly exclusive program here on the award-winning Classical Network. I want to thank our hosts, Bill McLaughlin, Joseph Horowitz, and Angel Gil Ordonez. I want to thank our recording engineer in New York, Bill Sigmund, of Digital Island Studios. Check them out at digital-island-studios.com. For this particular episode of Post Classical, Post Classical Ensemble and Mr. Horowitz and Maestro Angel Gil Ordonez would like to acknowledge and thank Diane Corwin Okarski for her support. Our next episode of Post Classical will come your way on Friday, December 15th, a fresh take on some well-known music of Franz Schubert. If you enjoyed this program, let us know and email us your comments at info@wwfm.org. I'm David Ozenberg. Thanks for listening.